Live from Chicago, this is Tom Scher filling in for Bruce Dumont with Beyond the Beltway, our analysis of national politics with occasional injections of rumor and humor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans, you from coast to coast. Tonight we feature commentary by Professor Art Sear of Carthage College of Kenosha, Wisconsin, the director of the A.W. Clausen Center for World Business. Also, Professor Charles Lipson of the University of Chicago, and Kathy Posner, retired advertising and promotions executive and a civic leader in the city of Chicago who sits on, among others, the Commission for Human Relations. Our program tonight, as always, comes to you from our home base on State Street, that great street in downtown Chicago, Illinois. Hello. Our toll-free phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289, 723-8289. And we welcome all of our listeners from coast to coast to hour number two of the program. Or if you're just tuning in, this would be hour number one for you. We've talked an awful lot tonight about terrorism, the hunt for terrorists. Of course, the British authorities have captured all four of what appears now to have been copycat bombers. And they do not appear to have been affiliated with the July 7th bombers who actually killed 52 travelers and presumably the bombers themselves. We talked about the hunt for terrorism, where the people in this country feel safe, the entire concept of profiling in the hunt for terrorists, and the ongoing need to make the United States of America as safe and secure as possible. Before we go back to the telephone calls, does anyone here on the panel want to revisit something we've said, something they want to expand on? Because right before we took a time out, I know we were hot and heavy into it.
I want to say that all the good news about capturing the second group of bombers has obscured the fact that in London, we don't know who sent these bombers. We don't know the people who planned it. We don't know how many secret cells there really are.
And this voice is Professor Charles Lipson.
And so that leads me to be very concerned. I was also concerned that even though the British have done a good job of rolling up some of the networks, they didn't know anything about this in advance. They were quite clear in saying they had not heard any chatter. In other words, this was kept completely secret. So the level of tradecraft among these terrorists is very high. And a final point is that I think that the British really do need to revisit not the toleration that they have, but the kind of openness to allowing people to openly advocate terrorism and plan it within their country and be subject to essentially no legal constraints until they actually act. I think the fact that Parliament has now acted on some of this is a good first step, but in fact, this is they do need to revisit that.
But also the first part of your statement directly addresses the second part of your statement in the sense that there was no advance word of this particular effort. I understand what you're saying about public advocacy of terrorism, but what's advocated in public has always seemed to me to be a lot less important than what's going on in private.
Well, the public advocacy occurred in a number of mosques where it appears that
sure.
These people were recruited.
Of course.
The second point is the fact that they didn't know anything tells you that even a very good intelligence agency, MI5, has been unable to penetrate these networks. That's a source of real concern.
And that scares the daylights out of me because, as Professor Sear was mentioning last hour of the program, the British have always set an example of the finest in intelligence. I suppose the Israelis long ago passed them because of the extreme need for security in Israel. But the British authorities, going back to prior to World War II, as I mentioned earlier, we patterned our own OSS off after them. Then they had to deal with the entire Irish Republican Army issue in the 60s and 70s. That's a little scary when they get beaten at their own game.
Well, terrorism is literally impossible to prevent entirely.
Oh, sure.
I don't want to be misunderstood. Mm-hmm. The loss of any life is terrible, and these kind of gruesome killings in this country, in Europe, and other parts of the world are unacceptable and awful. But in talking about the strengths of the British, I have a very clear memory of a very strong, impressive, very British English woman who was an acquaintance of my family's when I was quite small. And she talked about going through the Blitz. Only 20,000 people were killed in the Blitz, which isn't a lot by World War II standards, but it's a lot of people. And she would talk about coming out of the subway tunnels after the German incendiary raids. And the whole city, you know, they would some nights be encircled by fire.
Yeah.
Now, this war on terror, as long as we play our cards right, the struggle against Al-Qaeda and associated groups is manageable. And it's not World War III. Mm-hmm. It's not on anywhere near the level of World War II.
And but have there been no attacks in this country in nearly 4 years? Go ahead.
But if you speak to someone who lost a relative or a friend in the bombings at the World Trade Center, not the bomb, you know, in the World Trade Center, the Pentagon. To them, it's World War III.
Well, yeah, that's true, but we're not minimizing that, but overall, in the big picture, and I don't want to put it this way, but I will, all they did was bring down two buildings. That was a big deal. It was a horrible, terrible event. And we really...
They created fear.
They created fear. We really still don't have our arms around it. I mean, it's almost like we're numb and we just have been moving forward the last... That's how I feel sometimes. But when I say that's all they did, my point is, what else? So many other things could have been done, could still be done, will be done, we will get hit again. But it's so far...
That's why I'm scared.
Yeah, well...
So you're all making fun of me for being scared.
I'm not making fun of you, Kathy, but I'm saying that I don't walk around daily with fear, but I will tell you this. Every time I walk into one of the buildings in Chicago, which resembles the World Trade Center, the Illinois Center complex at the corner of the Great Street, Michigan Avenue, and Wacker Drive in Chicago, that's a very similar complex. A number of buildings linked by underground tunnels, parking garages, and whatnot. Very similar to World Trade, though not nearly as big. I think of that. I said, what would it have been like if these buildings came down? So I think about it every day. It doesn't consume me.
But if you think about what your real risks in life are, mm-hmm. there, Art drove in from one of the northern suburbs. I take airline flights. There are a lot of risks in your life. This adds to them. I don't mean to minimize it, but it's only one of many risks and not a large one. The point is that they try to create fear.
Yeah. Let's go to Austin, Texas, as we return to the phone lines on Beyond the Beltway. Hamad is listening on KLBJ. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. My name is Riyad Hamad, HMAD. I live in Austin, Texas. And I've been living here for 35 years. This is the first time I'm allowed to speak on those radio talk shows because I'm traveling on the road, and I just happened to turn on to KLBJ. Anyway, talking about the security in this country, I travel once a month to hold events with Muslims and Christians and Jews, trying to find a peaceful resolution for the problem in the Arab world. Last year, I was in Washington, D.C. during an Orange Alert Week. I had a bag that had 70 pounds of arts and crafts and embroidery from Bethlehem, from the Christians.
Yes.
And guess what? Nobody checked me in. Nobody checked me out. Didn't even charge me $26 to go from D.C. to Rhode Island, where I was headed. That's one. This week, I'm traveling down the road. I'm talking from my cell phone. My car was pounded, so I had to take the bus. And the man in front of me...
Hold on, just a moment. Your car was impounded?
Yeah, I was parking the wrong place, and I had to take the bus back to get another car. Anyway,
So your car got towed.
Yeah.
So you're saying you're more likely to get hit with a parking ticket or a tow than you are with being searched for security reasons in Washington. I'm not sure what your point is. Anecdotally, I enjoy talking to you, but I'm trying to see what your point is here.
Okay, my point is that the security that they're saying, you know, like during Orange last week, they were supposed to have bad security restrictions. There was absolutely nothing. I got on the train, I got off, and nobody checked me.
Well, there's no question about that. There is a lot of inconsistency. And let's not forget, 9/11 could have been avoided, but the FBI was asleep at the switch. Let's not forget that. And there remain tremendous gaps in our fighting of terror. It was discovered this week that there are 8,000 hours of audio tapes that haven't even been listened to by security experts to interpret possible terrorist threats.
That makes me more nervous again.
Rose Bynum, a scientist at GlaxoSmithKline, on a company with bigger responsibilities.
I believe we have to do more than just develop drugs. We have to try to help people who need them get them. I couldn't work for a company that didn't believe the same thing. I've been at GSK 17 years. Believe me, we're here to help everyone.
To learn about our access programs, call 1-888-825-5249. GlaxoSmithKline.
When I do it, everything goes dark, and I feel like a different person.
Kenzie Olson is under the influence of her community theater volunteer, helping out at an after-school theater program. She helps Kenzie stay off drugs. Be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer. No matter what it is, you have something to offer. Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313 and be an influence on the kids in your community. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Thank you. Beyond the Beltway continues at a radio outlet near you. We're glad you're with us on this last Sunday in the month of July. My name is Tom Scher, filling in for Bruce Dumont on Beyond the Beltway. Bruce, your friendly host, will be back next week. I guess I'm kind of friendly. I would like to think so. Shouldn't just
sure, Tom. Describe. Sure. Yeah, whatever you say. You're in charge.
Yeah, sure. Of course, I got the microphones in front of you.
I object.
Those voices are Professor Art Sear of Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Kenosha. Professor Charles Lipson of the University of Chicago. And you heard a little laughter at the outset of this portion of the program from Kathy Posner, civic leader in Chicago who sits on many charitable boards and commissions, and she is, among others, a member of the Commission on Human Relations. Let's go right back to the telephone calls at 1-800-723-8289. We're being heard this evening from Lynchburg, Virginia, to Anchorage, Arkansas, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, Bakersfield, California, Colorado Springs, Colorado. And where is this call from? Wouldn't you know it? It's from our hometown, Chicago, Illinois, listening on WLS, the Big 89. Hi, this is Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. I think one of the most important things we have to do in winning this war on terror is that we have to defeat these lies that we've been saying that Bin Laden attacked us because of his hatred for democracy and freedom. This is not the case. And we have to expose these lies for what they are. He attacked us because of brutal Israeli terror. And I think we need to be honest about this. And if there's any evidence, oh, no, he attacked us because of democracy and freedom, I'd love to see that.
As the Jew sitting here in the panel, I really don't feel like getting into a 2 hours worth of back and forth with you. But I want to talk about brutal Israeli tactics. Israel's only reacted to how they've been treated.
Let me say this, Mike, okay? I'm going to move away from the description of Israel as having practiced brutality. I have to agree with Kathy. If people were to just leave Israel alone, just leave them alone, okay? I don't see how there would be any need for the Israelis to engage in any military action whatsoever, because unlike most countries in the Middle East, Israel covets no real estate, no ground that belongs to someone else. That's one thing. Secondly, I do feel that it's important to say I was among those who condemned the Israelis for having Jonathan Pollard and other people engage in espionage. If they're our friends, why didn't the Israelis cooperate in the investigation? They never really did fully, and they lied to the United States, and they continue to lie about it to this day. So I'm not afraid to criticize Israel, and I think they deserve it. But I think to say that Israel practices brutality, and that's what brought on the terrorism, I believe it's inaccurate. But hang on, Mike.
May I respond?
Hang on. Before you do, let me go over to this. Would it be okay with you if I said the following? If we move the discussion to this, if not, fine. I do feel that you are 100% correct when you say that those who say the reason Bin Laden and his ilk are against the United States is they're anti-American and it's the blue jeans and it's the sex in the movies and it's all that stuff and it's the promiscuity, I think that's a lot of hooey. The Islamic extremists are against the United States for one reason, because we back Israel. That's it. Now, a subplot of that is Bin Laden didn't like our military presence.
I don't think that's right.
He didn't. Okay, that's okay. That's my opinion. He didn't like our military presence in Saudi Arabia. We were invited there, and we took the invitation because who wouldn't want a stronghold in the middle, a foothold in the Middle East? He felt that we were trying to exploit the Saudis, and Saudi Arabia had its own issues for inviting us in over 20 years ago. That's my take on it. Professor Lipson disagrees. Let me see, Mike, what you think about that.
Yeah, okay, let me go ahead and refute the Israeli apologist that you're sitting with. First of all, this is actually an act worse than terrorism than what Bin Laden did. When the Israelis invaded and stole the Arab land in 1967, throwing millions of people...
Yeah.
Let me speak, and then you can refute.
Well, I mean, you
wrong.
Just decided
you
to... No, you
oh,
just...
my God, you can't debate with me. What?
Go ahead. Give your polemic. Give all your anti-Semitic screed.
No, hold on. I'm not saying... Hold on.
Offensive.
Charles, we don't know that the caller is an anti-Semite. He may disagree with Israel politically and historically, but that doesn't make him an anti-Semite.
It's worse than terrorism. All they've done is steal land. This is the language that this man's being permitted. I find this offensive.
Okay, Mike, before you respond, I'll tell you that. I'll say one thing. One rule I will set as the moderator of this discussion is I will not allow you to say that the Israelis have engaged in terrorism, because I don't believe retaliatory military and intelligent action is terrorism. I'm going to leave it at that. I won't allow you to say that. Whatever else you have, the floor is open. We're quiet. You speak, please.
Thank you. Now, here's my challenge, okay? Now, for the life of me, can you tell me how flying planes into flying planes into buildings and killing 3,000 people is evil, but invading the Golan Heights, the Gaza Strip, and throwing 3 million people out of their homes into refugee camps and denying them allowed to come back to their homes, how that's actually good? No, the truth is Both are evil, both are demonic, and we as Americans, we cannot defend this type of occupation. Return all the stolen land back to the Palestinians, and this war is over, and I challenge anybody to
So you want to drive Israel
that.
Into this? First of all, you call them demons. Okay, so that's not supposed to be anti-Semitic.
I didn't
okay.
call it demon.
You called it
no.
demonic. What is a demon?
Absolutely, it's evil.
Demonic.
People's land.
They're evil, they're demons. They took 3 million people, which nobody, even the Palestinians, don't say. You apparently don't want any Israel at all. You'd like to drive them into the sea. They took the Golan Heights when Syria made war on them. They didn't, I mean, my Lord, man, read some history.
And thank you, Mike, for the telephone call. Let's say hi to another Mike from Topeka, Kansas, listening on 710 AM. You're on Beyond the Beltway.
Well, thank you for just an old Chicagoan raised in Lansing, Illinois, there and transplanted to Topeka. On my way from Oshkosh and just picked up your station, you know, while I'm driving along. And what I have noticed, you know, we're all you know, the offspring of immigrants. And, you know, the hardest day of my grandfather's life was when he got his citizenship papers and put them on the wall. But I don't see the latest flux of immigrants, whether they be from the Mideast or storming across the Mexican border, breaking records to get to the courthouse to become U.S. citizens. It looks more like colonization to me. And, you know, that's my comment.
I agree with you, Mike. This is Kathy Posner. And besides the seeming that they're not looking for citizenship papers, all the immigrants are asking for us to speak their languages. And that's what really bothers me also.
Well, I think...
You come to America, you learn how to speak English.
You know, down here in the Topeka area, even the local newspaper over here has one day a week written in Spanish. You know,
well,
now,
Topeka,
this is America.
Topeka has always had a large Hispanic population. And if you're marketing to a group, you do what makes sense for that group. My feeling.
No. The minority population in Topeka, Hispanic-wise, is less than 6%.
Okay. Well, my point is this, and I'll be very simple. I am. I think you can tell by listening to this program. I'm a Democrat. I'm a progressive. I have a lot of liberalism about me, but I'm also very conservative in many ways. I think English should be the official language of the United States of America.
Absolutely. You know, like I said earlier, my grandfather came here. They spoke Russian and Polish, in the house, but they insisted that their kids speak English because they wanted to be American.
Let me try to reassure the caller just briefly. Throughout, if you look at the history of newspapers in America, there's a rich tradition of foreign language newspapers throughout our history. Dwight Eisenhower, English was his second language. He was born in Kansas, but until he was 10 years old, his family spoke German at home. It doesn't seem to have hurt his standing in American history or his accomplishments. At some level, it probably helped him as Supreme Commander of Allied forces in Europe, and certainly after the war, during the height of the Cold War. We can debate about these things, but I think it's important not to be alarmed. If enough Americans get alarmed, then I think our politicians will reflect that. So far, people have been quite tolerant, certainly of legal immigration, also of illegal immigration, and it's important to focus on that distinction that's implied in your complaint, sir.
Thank you for the call. Kathy, do you have something you wanted to say? Because I want to get back to a point Charles tried to make earlier.
Back to that you should learn how to speak English, and that I don't understand why people feel that every other language should be spoken and should be allowed, and why the Department of Labor prints all of its pamphlets in 350 different languages.
Yeah, I just don't think that should be. I mean, I think, and my relatives, my aunt, the oldest sibling in her family, didn't speak English until she went to the first grade, and she darn near learned it quickly, you know.
Kids learn the language quickly, and we really disserve immigrants if we don't offer them a lot of opportunities to speak the language.
If you want to make a living at a professional level, not just in this country, but pretty much throughout the world, you've got to have English.
And as somebody who has embraced his own ethnicity since, you know, he was a little kid, I think it's wonderful that people embrace their culture, that they know their language. I regret that I don't speak the language my grandparents spoke. I wish I'd learned it. I think that our ethnic pride is a wonderful thing, and it should be a very consistent part of everyone's being. But, you know, when you're dealing with an English-speaking society primarily, you should be able to speak English. I feel that that's a basic thing. Charles, before we go back to some more of the calls, earlier I said that I believe the prime reason Osama bin Laden and the Muslim extremists are against the United States is because we back Israel and because we are present in Saudi Arabia. And you disagreed with that.
No, you didn't say the second in your first first comment.
Okay. Look, I just wanted to make sure that you got a chance to say what you wanted to say.
I think that when Osama initially said why he had done these attacks, he listed American presence, the presence of infidels, on Saudi territory. This was at the request of the Saudis, though we had pressed them, and the reason that we had troops there was precisely to protect against Saddam Hussein and the Iraqi army. We've gotten those out now, but I think that when, and of course they hate the idea, not just that we back Israel, they hate the idea that Israel exists. But remember what their goal is. Their goal in opposing America is actually because they think that the great Satan backs the little Satans throughout the region. They want to overthrow the governments of Egypt, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and all the rest. They think that that going after the American support is the way to get at those goals.
That's a very good point. I'm glad you raised that. And again, why do you think the Saudis wanted us there? Because they were worried about their own problems from other Islamic nations in the Middle East, or groups.
And I think that America has actually begun a policy of moving back from the support of these repressive regimes, but you can see how difficult it is to install democracies in the region.
You're listening to Beyond the Beltway, and we have another 30 minutes remaining in the program. Stay right where you are, please, and thanks for listening on this Sunday.
Whenever I get a letter from a lawyer, I say to myself, look out. Well, attorney William Welsenbach wrote, Dear Mr. Orrick, I've written letters of complaint regarding products that I've purchased. I decided to order your Orrick vacuum cleaner, and I'll tell you that my wife and I are more than pleased with it. It obviously reflects great design and engineering and quality manufacturing. Mr. Orrick, you are to be commended. Believe me, folks, I don't make these letters up.
So your kid's smoking pot, and now you're afraid to say something because they might push you away. Maybe this will help you out.
I hate you!
You went through my room?
It's just a little pot.
You're grounding me?
It's just a little pot.
Get used to it. When your kid's trying pot, you have to say something, no matter how they might react. Because to help them with their problem, first you have to get over yours. Action. The anti-drug.
For more information, visit theantidrug.com or call 1-800-788-2800. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Beyond the Beltway continues on this final Sunday in July. Hi again, everybody. Tom Scher in for the vacationing Bruce Dumont, who will return 1 week from tonight.
We hope.
Yes, safely from his vacation. We are joined by panelists this week, Kathy Posner, civic leader in Chicago, retired advertising and promotion executive, Professor Charles Lipson of the University of Chicago, and the director of the A.W. Clausen Center for World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin, Professor Art Sear. We'll go right back to the phone calls, if we may. Any objections by the panel here? Shall we just, okay?
It's fair.
All right.
We've had a lot of
we've talked a lot. We tend to talk a little bit. Let's say hi to David, who's listening on the Internet in San Francisco, California. David, what radio station are you listening to on the net tonight?
Oh, boy, I'd have to flip around. I'm not sure. I just, as a matter of fact, I think your main link, though, is down right now. So
right, that's why I was asking you, because our Internet is not functioning for streamlining audio tonight. Normally, you can listen to this program on our website, www.beyondthebeltway.com, beyondthebeltway.com.
I may have gone through the Kansas City station. I'm not positive.
Well, that's
it is on a local station in San Francisco.
Yeah, we're just glad to have you here. Just fantastic.
Okay. I told friends to listen on the Internet.
All right, go ahead.
You know, I'm interested in the this whole idea.
And by the way, I should say in Kansas City, we're on KCMO, and we love them dearly. Go ahead.
Sure. Yeah, the whole problem of America spending itself into an incredible hole is really the reason for it is because we have treated 9/11 as if it was a war instead of 9/11 as if it was a crime. We had those old James Bond movies, Goldfinger and Dr. No and all of these other types, to warn us that there are madmen that have got incredibly large amounts of money, and you can't fight them with battle scenarios. It's impossible. And in this case, if we had dealt with this as if it was a crime, we would not have had to ruin America's reputation. We would not have to have jeopardized all of our troops with incredibly toxic types of weaponry.
Well, okay, hang on just a moment. Yeah, it has come out that troops who've served in the Middle East have been exposed to toxic chemicals used in the war, and that's a whole other Agent Orange type thing, which is just brutal. Let me just try and keep the discussion focused a little bit here. You mentioned that, and the Iraq War is almost a separate issue from fighting al-Qaeda. I mean, George Bush has tried to tie it in, but it's separate, in fact, and he hasn't been truthful, in my opinion. But let's leave this for a moment here.
I think this is a very fundamental issue that the caller has raised.
The financial issue.
No.
Right.
The issue about whether to treat this as a war or something like it, okay, or a crime.
But isn't it both?
Well, let me give a little background and then begin a discussion about it, because I think it's a quite fundamental issue. Until 9/11, we treated all these things as a crime, and the point about crimes is essentially they're not really prevented so much as you catch the criminals afterwards. And what you're really concerned about, for example, when you do phone taps and all the rest, is whether the evidence you collect is evidence that's admissible in court. The problem that we began to see at that point was, first of all, if the people are suicide bombers, then there's nobody left to try. And the second is that they were going to be using increasingly lethal means, including weapons of mass destruction, if they could get their hands on them. So the question is whether you wanted to...
The point is you wanted to
preempt them. Now, that's completely separate from the war in Iraq, but it is related directly to the war in Afghanistan, where they had a base. And
correct.
I mean, is the caller saying that we shouldn't have fought a war in Afghanistan, which seems to have had a very devastating effect on al-Qaeda?
No, it actually didn't. And as a matter of fact, if you look at the history of leading up to the Afghanistan invasion on our part, they were quite willing to extradite Osama.
Oh, no, they weren't.
No,
they were not. And even Professor Sear has said that. Go ahead, Professor.
Sear and
Lipson don't always agree is my point here. But no, Afghanistan was not willing to expedite.
Extradite.
Share some of your silly views.
I think
all right?
Maybe you're referring to at least one nation in Africa, which said Clinton has
been
criticized.
Sudan at one point said they would.
Yes. Yeah.
They said if we showed evidence, they would extradite him, and we've never shown evidence, to the U.S. population.
What do you mean we've never? What evidence of Bin Laden being complicit in this?
Absolutely.
What are you crazy?
Bin Laden.
What are you talking about? What about all the videos you've seen? Come on.
Oh, those are fake videos.
That's it. That's where I terminate the call, because I mean I'm not gonna talk to some lunatic. I mean those are fake videos. Boy, oh boy. Well, then it's all fake. Then the towers never came down.
You know, I don't think that we landed on the moon either.
That's a lunatic call. I thought he was actually going
to San Francisco.
That's true, though.
Yes. I thought he was actually going to make a good point, though, because if he's saying we need to trace the financial...
Oh, that's right.
The financial aspect of this
and
thing.
The Saudis have to crack down on the people who are giving the money. I mean, Lord have mercy. There's still money, and it looks as if there may have been money that went into London. Now the Saudis really have responsibility.
We have gone after some of these sham charities run by Islamic Americans.
Yeah, the Treasury Department, in fact, has gotten a lot of financial resources.
Yeah.
Of course, this organization is not a high-expense organization. It can be run on a shoestring, but... One of our smarter moves was to go after their financial resources. I do think it's both a crime and a war. At some level, that's a false
distinction. Like Wrigley Spearmint Gum, it's two in one?
No, that's Doublemint Gum.
Doublemint Gum, that's right. But I think that's quite right. It is a crime.
And you guys...
But I think that when we were bombed at Pearl Harbor, that was... I mean, of course it's a crime, but it's not right to see it as a crime. I think
that was an established military power with combatants who were in uniform attacking a military target.
That's right.
Indefensibly, to be sure, but that was a war. This is more amorphous.
And I think that's right, too, and I think that it's right.
The listeners here always agree.
Yeah. I think that it's also right to say that our response has been overly military in that we need to have financial sanctions, we need to go after the donors, we need to... have a much more savvy approach to the whole cutting off of terror.
Let's say hi to Pete, and you got to cut it off from the money. It's all from the money to start. Let's say hi to Pete in Kansas City, Missouri, listening on KCMO. Hi, Pete.
Hi. Boy, I've been on hold for so long, and I got a whole bunch of different things to talk.
Thank you for holding for so long.
Yes.
Oh, that was interesting. I better respond anyway. My original point was that this, I think... we have to recognize is an ideological conflict that we have against people that are, let's say, religious zealots, Wahhabists.
Okay.
And we can, we don't have to worry about killing the suicide bombers. They take care of themselves. We can't put all of the people in jail that we catch. In fact, we can't even catch all the people that may be willing to become this intense in their beliefs. So, therefore, we have to exert some sort of influence, I think, to dissuade them in their beliefs. I'm not trying to change their religion, but suicide is...
How do we go about taking away the desire of the suicide bombers when it seems to be born of desperation and hatred?
No, it's part of their religion.
No, I don't think that it is born of desperation and hatred entirely. It's born of the fact that it's a straight shot into heaven,
right,
and it's one of the few ways that they can get in there. And... years ago, I think, I think I hear various sources of people that succeeded in doing this. We'll dip our bullets in pig blood, we'll do this, we'll do that, and...
I think we're barking up the wrong tree, if you don't mind. If we're putting a bad rap on the Muslim religion and saying this is part of their religion, I think this is one of the serious mistakes we've made collectively in talking about the war against Al-Qaeda.
I don't believe it is fundamentally part of the religion. I mean, it's straight shot to heaven. Really? That's what some of these extremists have chosen to believe, but I don't see that anywhere in the Quran. Is that anywhere in there?
I'm not an expert on the Muslim religion. I do know Muhammad was a warrior, and there is a more militaristic tradition, certainly than in Christianity and arguably than in Judaism, but to say that this is part of the Muslim religion, I tell you, we're making a serious mistake.
But that's actually a battle that has to be fought among Muslims. That is to say, moderate Muslims, and they did something this past weekend in issuing a fatwa saying that these kind of terrorist attacks are wrong. They have to take back control of the main sinews of their own religion. That can't be something that the U.S. government does. That can't be something that non-Muslims in the end do.
Thank you very much for the call. Sam in Fresno, California, listening on KMJ Radio. This is Beyond the Beltway, and you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking the call.
You're welcome.
I just want to point out that, first of all, I'm a Muslim, and the word is not Muslim. It's Muslim with an S. That's first of all. Second of all, what Bin Laden is doing, it's his own personal agenda. I don't know what he got after this. Because in a narration by our prophet, which is Muhammad, it says that Muslims will be divided into 73 sectors, 27 of them in the hellfire, and one in the heaven, which is who follows him. And back to what the guy said about the Wahhabism, it's something that one of the sectors came up with against people that do not tolerate any terrorism that's going on. And as far as the Quran goes, those people that do kill themselves, they are going to the hellfire, because Allah, which is our God, we call him Allah, is the only one that could take your life. You are not entitled to take your life. No one else is entitled to take your life except him. So for those suicide bombers, for whatever reason they're doing, they're going to the hellfire for sure. As for those that tell them otherwise, you have to know that when a person is 16 or 17 years old in the Muslim world, and he listens to a cleric that supposedly has knowledge and knows a lot about the religion, when he tells them, yeah, this and that, he kind of plans the suicide inside his heart. And when somebody is 16, 17, they believe everything they say. So before we kind of like explore or see what's going on, the Muslims themselves is in fight with each other.
Well, that's right there in the community where these so-called respected elders or clerics, you know, should not be blindly followed. But I'm glad you did, Sam. Obviously, you have some knowledge of your own religion, and you did point out again, as we have here, that it is not inherent in Islam that you are supposed to be a suicide bomber and that you're going to reach some glory doing it. The people who do it and their families think so, but they're wrong.
My name's Brian, and I've been suffering from psoriasis for over 15 years. And this product, Skin Zinc, actually works. I love it because there's no steroids. You just spray it on, and it works. It's like having brand new skin.
I'm Janine, and I just want to tell everyone out there that Skin Zinc is amazing. I don't itch. Look, I'm in a t-shirt and shorts. I finally have a social life again. Just try it. It works. Believe me.
My name is Mark, and I've used everything there is to treat the dry, flaky skin on my arms. Skin Zinc helps, and I don't know why doctors don't have this, but I'm telling you, they don't.
After using Skin Zinc, it's completely cleared up. Skin Zinc is phenomenal.
I tried Skin Zinc, and in about 1 week, I noticed that the rashes on my arms were going away. It works better than anything I've ever used, period.
Call now for your in-home 30-day risk-free trial of Skin Zinc at 800-507-5904. That's 800-507-5904. Skin Zinc helps you eliminate psoriasis. Call 800-507-5904. Call now and get relief. 800-507-5904.
Beyond the Beltway in the home stretch here on this Sunday, the last Sunday in July. Bruce Dumont is on vacation. He'll be back next week. I'm Tom Scher of ESPN Radio in Chicago, filling in for Bruce this evening, joined by Professor Charles Lipson, by Professor Art Sear, and by Kathy Posner, and by all of you listening coast to coast on radio stations in areas such as Rochester, New York, Youngstown, Ohio, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz, California. Birmingham, Alabama, and Austin, Texas, just to name a few. We're glad to have you with us. We'll take some more phone calls here and then have some concluding comments from our panel here. Let's say hi to Brian in Schaumburg, Illinois, listening on WLS, the Big 89 out of Chicago. Hi, Brian.
Good evening, Tom and panelists. An aspect of this terrorist problem that I don't believe gets enough attention is the Western world, mainly the United States, and how we relate to the Muslim world. My question to the panel is, why do we continue to prop up governments in countries like Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Pakistan and others? The majority of the people in those countries do not like. The only way the governments stay in power is because we're pumping money and weapons and intelligence to these governments. But most of the people
I'll tell you why we back them. We back them because it's in our interests to back them.
We need oil.
Well, no, the caller is raising a very fundamental point. I think what you saw, I think, after 9/11 under Bush, for better or for worse, is a fundamental realignment of our policies in the direction that the caller is suggesting. That is, until then, our idea was that you could back these regimes because they were stable, pro-American, and would assist us in various foreign policy issues. I think that the judgment that we made in the aftermath of 9/11 is that the governments weren't very stable, that they weren't assisting us, and that to keep themselves in power, they had ceded so much to their own extremists that even if the government itself was supporting us, they were creating the kind of circumstances, as in Saudi Arabia, that we're really creating havoc around the world. So I think, but the problem you can see is that if you quickly move away from support, the groups that might, first of all,
you create
the groups that are in power won't let go.
You create a vacuum into which,
right.
into which they'll come.
But that's the whole point of what the administration is trying to do and why they're being so starkly resisted in Iraq.
As a matter of fact, I'd make a contrary point. I think we were in a much better position to influence events in the region before we invaded Iraq, as indeed the first Bush administration did in what was in many ways an ideal time for the exercise of American power. After the Cold War, Arab states lost the Soviet Union as a benefactor. And before our current difficulties, there was at least the threat of American military intervention and sometimes the reality. Mr. Scheer's heritage state, Lebanon, we had a very successful military intervention in 1958. Only academics know about it because we had no military casualties. With remarkable smoothness, we managed to stabilize and improve
the shores of Tripoli.
Situation. We have no capacity to intervene today anywhere. Three quarters plus of the American military, including a large percentage of reserve and National Guard forces, is in Iraq, getting ready to go to Iraq, or just back from Iraq.
But Bush won.
I think making this point underscores what a basic strategic mistake has been made. And if you believe that we are in a better position to influence events in the Muslim world generally, or anywhere, even in Iraq, as a result of this invasion, I just disagree.
Then what should we have done if we didn't invade?
I think we should have focused on destroying Al-Qaeda, and I think we should have pursued, everything's clear in hindsight, but I think we should have pursued the policy hindsight was clearly working, containing Iraq.
All right, let's go ahead, Brian, before you finish.
One other quick point. You know, I think the Iranians read this loud and clear that we're over a barrel, and we've got our heads, our hands full with Iraq, and
right.
I think that before the year is out, they're going to have a nuclear weapon,
and Iran is
we can do with it.
As we speak, Iran is extending massive, and I mean massive, financial assistance to Iraq. They're not doing that because it's in America's interest for those two countries to get closer together.
Thank you for the call. Let's say hi to Cheryl from Evanston, Illinois, the home of Northwestern University.
Right.
And a great city. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, good evening to all of you.
Good evening. Welcome to Beyond the Beltway.
Great. Okay. In the beginning, we went to the defense of Kuwait when Iraq invaded Kuwait, but a lot of people felt that we didn't finish the job because we didn't get Saddam Hussein.
But so don't forget, the elder Bush had the coalition to be accountable to, and if we had gone in, that would have been contrary to the mission we had promised when we built that coalition.
And the old man
did the right thing. Yes. And I'll tell you another thing, the old man does not support this war. He gave Ted Kennedy the Bush Library Award a year and a half ago, and that was a direct slap in the face of his kid. Go ahead.
Wow. But after 9/11, younger Bush, I guess, felt he could finish the job his father didn't. Yeah. So after one thing led to another.
You may remember the press conference when he said, well, let's not forget, they tried to kill my dad.
Which,
by the way, Bill Clinton retaliated for when he bombed the Iraqi intelligence headquarters and killed their intelligence elite and a lot of military officers, but we'll leave that alone because we want to invade Iraq.
People are watching these radical Muslim insurgents, whatever, using terror, things like cutting off innocent people's heads in the name of Allah, and I think people in general here have just had it with the jihad. In general, just we have seen too many horrible situations where they have, where the Muslims have gone overboard.
Well, extremism does bring that sort of behavior. I don't care if it's the Japanese in World War II massacring the Chinese civilians at Nanking, or if it's the things you're referring to. This entire type of behavior is so abhorrent to any decency. It's embarrassing. I want to make one point. I just mentioned how Clinton retaliated, and we thank you, Cheryl, for the call. Clinton retaliated for the plot to kill Bush Sr. He also failed to do anything, virtually anything, about the USS Cole attack. So I'm not going to sit here and say Bill Clinton did everything right. He also didn't go in and bomb Bin Laden's camps because he was afraid of public reaction at the time the movie Wag the Dog came out. So he made his mistakes, too. We want to thank our panelists, and we have enjoyed the discussion. We've had a lot of callers in tonight, and I'm told that we've had a lot of new people joining the program, calling in. We thank you very much for that. Professor Art Sear of Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Really enjoyed having you with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
And as always, Professor Charles Lipson of the University of Chicago, very interesting things said by you, and I'm not surprised.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
And Kathy Posner, who I've known only for a number of years. I don't want to give your age away. Good to have you with us, Kathy.
Thank you. By the way, you didn't point out that President Bush had his yearly physical over the weekend, did very well, lost 8 pounds.
Yeah.
He said he has like the cholesterol and blood pressure of a 30-year-old.
He's in fantastic physical shape. I saw he weighs 192 pounds, and I'm shocked that I weigh 7 pounds less than the President of the United States. It's a major accomplishment for me.
But it scares me that he doesn't have high blood pressure, because as President, you should have high blood pressure.
This has been a Jenny B. Jenny B. Production in association with Wilbur Entertainment. Our thanks to Charles Campbell and Tom Veracruz for their assistance. I'm Tom Scher. Good night from Chicago.
You've seen it in the newspapers, heard it on the radio, watched it on TV. The good news about Aleve.